Hey everyone, and welcome to this, the first soapbox edition of the Risky Business Podcast for 2019. I'm Patrick Gray. As regular listeners would know, this isn't the regular weekly Risky Business Podcast. All soapbox podcasts are paid promotions. We ran 10 of these last year. We're running more of them this year. The total number is up to 14, but we are running fewer of our other promotional podcast series, Snake Oilers. So the total number of promotional podcasts on the feed will remain the same. But in this Soapbox podcast, we are chatting with a company with a legitimately fascinating origin story. Now, you remember how in 2017 and 2018, people were running all these shonky initial coin offerings where they'd sell off millions of dollars of crypto tokens on the basis of a two-minute video and a white paper? Well, what happened in most of those cases is after the ICO, the founders would take the money, launder it, and move to the Bahamas. Well, Polyswarm did raise its money in an ICO, about $26 million. And because they weren't mainlining the ICO Kool-Aid, they cashed out about half of what they raised into real money before cryptocurrency values crashed. Now, instead of moving to the Bahamas, they actually have stuck around to build the business that token holders chose to fund. Now, of course, their token value has crashed like everyone else's has, but that doesn't matter. They're funded. And because of their unconventional funding source, they don't have a whole bunch of venture capitalists breathing down their neck and guiding the development. They've got a lot more freedom than most other companies that receive this type of funding. So, what is the business? It's a marketplace for threat detection. Yes, I know my pinned tweet says, I do not want your blockchain expert as a guest on my podcast. And yes, this company does use blockchain fairy dust. But as you'll hear, the blockchain element to this business isn't really what it's about. Indeed, the founder and CEO of Polyswarm, Steve Bassi, who you're going to hear from in a minute, says he would find life a lot easier in many ways if they weren't actually using blockchain tech here as a marketplace enabler. He's also banned himself from ever attending a blockchain conference ever again in his life. Okay, so what is the Polyswarm marketplace and how does it work? As you'll hear in this interview, it took me a bit to actually understand exactly what they're doing here, but what they've essentially built is a marketplace for AV engines. And the best way to explain this, is just to explain how it works. If you're an enterprise client or an MSSP or someone who's got samples that you have questions about, you can submit these samples to this marketplace. You're submitting it with a question, is this file good or bad? And you attach a tokenized value to the answer. On the other side of the equation are all these AV engines. Now, we're talking big ones, small ones, even tiny little micro engines that are only good at detecting very niche threats. So the enterprise submits the sample, and that can be like a whole file or just a hash, and it gets distributed to all of the people who are running these AV engines. They scan the file, and if they're super confident of an answer, they return that answer as well as a tokenized stake as a measure of their confidence. The idea is you can have a competitive marketplace for threat detection in which even niche players can participate. Now, of course, you know, determining the accuracy of engines, of the various engines determination, I mean, usually they're relying on the fact that you're going to get multiple answers and, you know, that way you can sort of figure out who's right and who's wrong. In the cases where you can't, there are actually these people involved in this platform called arbiters who can come in and actually, you know, do teardowns, look at stuff and figure out who's right and who's wrong. But the whole idea is that, you know, good engines get rewarded, bad engines suffer. So it is definitely an interesting idea. Polyswarm Chief Executive Steve Bassi joined me to talk through the whole concept, and here's what he had to say.
You know, the business is basically about this frustration we had, right? And it was like, okay, we were essentially doing incident response work, and we were building these one-off tools to look for, you know, certain binaries on a system or certain traffic patterns in a network or whatever, right? And we would build these for one customer as part of a sort of a consultancy we had. And we'd take them to another customer and be like, hey, you should use this on your network. And they're like, that's great, guys, but like distributing this in my enterprise is just going to be, you know, more headache than it's worth. So this one we kind of got, we're like frustrated, and we said, okay, well, this is interesting. Like, there's got to be a lot of other small shops out there like us that have these tools sitting on a shelf, right? And essentially, like, they're able to, you know, detect emergent threats, but no one's using them because they're on the shelf. And that was sort of the idea behind Polyswarm. Like, what if we put together a marketplace where these tooling or this sort of latent tooling it was actively looking for threats and in a competitive manner and being rewarded for it. That would be great for everybody. But
before we talk that. About the marketplace element to this, sure. And that is certainly very interesting. I mean, it is a cool idea. Just the idea of taking these, you know, little packages that everyone's working on and gluing them together, putting them in a cloud service, because we should mention that it's a cloud service. I mean, that makes an awful lot of sense right off the bat, doesn't it?
We thought so, especially when it allows you to sort of assemble, you know, threat coverage from several different sources into sort of one cohesive package. You know, we think that's what's often missing, right? Like people cover the middle of the bell curve well, but the tails are what you worry about.
I'm guessing you're going to have some sort of standard way of actually hosting these engines. Is that like some sort of container or Docker-based thing or VMs? Like how do you even begin to take tools like that, you know, your own tools and tools from other shops and start gluing them together into a cloud service where you can throw a file or something at it and get some sort of determination back? Like, how do you standardize that so you can start using multiple engines?
Yeah, so good question. In practice, it's a host of things, right? So as you can imagine, some tools actually sandbox something and rely on full like virtualization extensions of a machine, right? So we didn't want to be too prescriptive about saying, okay, you need to run this in X, Y, or Z, you know, VM or a Docker container. So we ended up focusing a lot on the infrastructure of the piping. And because this is sort of a decentralized, you know, distributed participation thing, users have the option to either run the engine in their own environment, and that means up, you know, into like actual hardware, or they have the ability to run it, you know, in some sort of scalable cloud service, AWS, GCP, whatever, right? At least for the public portions of the network. So the idea of the marketplace was that, you know, it's not the traditional brick and mortar thing where you have to show up in the data center to participate. You can sort of participate from whatever location makes sense. And so we're not really prescriptive about a container. Like your engine, you can run it within your environment. I'd say the one exception to that is, you know, we're looking into this aspect of running private communities. So these are enterprise users who have sensitive data, and they actually need it examined by engines that are sort of, you know, in this enclave and firewalled off from the world so they don't leak data. So that's something we're working on right now.
Okay, so the idea is me, enterprise user, customer of PolySwarm, I submit, is it the enterprise customers who submit stuff to the marketplace to say, hey, you know, I've discovered this suspicious file, you know, I'm going to run it against all of the engines that are participating in the marketplace. Like, what's the dynamic of the marketplace here? Because I don't quite get it yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's helpful to break it down into the supply and the demand, right? So the demand, like you're discussing, is the enterprises who say, hey, I got this weird file or got this mail attachment, looks hinky, you know, what do several engines think about it? If you're an enterprise using PolySwarm, you submit artifacts to the marketplace. Artifacts to us means file, URL, you know, on the roadmap, we have network traffic, other things like that, right? And what you're asking is, hey, is this thing bad or not? So when you submit it to the marketplace, there are multiple engines out there. And then we've got the other case where it's actually, you know, some antivirus companies, if they're unsure in their own engine, they traditionally run things through something like VirusTotal and get opinions from several different engines to sort of act as a backstop for areas they're either not strong in, file formats, for example, or, you know, just sort of add more weight to the decision of the malintent of the file they're making. The engines are things like traditional antivirus engines, but also smaller tools like we were talking about earlier that may be built by small shops, right? And they basically weigh in on whether or not this file is good or bad. And they don't just weigh in with their opinion, but they actually stake a token on it, an amount of money. And it's sort of putting your money where your mouth is. And it's based on something called a prediction market.
So really the piece that you're providing here is this sort of tokenized marketplace for AV engines and smaller shops where they can compete. But what's the incentive for them to participate? Why? Tell me why they're putting up tokens with monetary value as like bets on the confidence of their determination. Like, what's in it for them?
A couple things. You know, one, I'm sure there's a lot of small shops that face the same problem we do out there, right? And it's kind of having this distribution channel for this small focused tool that's, you know, useful, but only for part of somebody's security problem, right? So those guys are happy to have this distribution channel and basically be able to make, you know, continuous revenue off that tool. for maintaining it, keeping it up to date, you know, understanding new threat actors that come out. And then there's the sort of traditional big AV companies, right? And right now they get in a room and compete with each other once a year for, you know, some large enterprise's business on the endpoint, instead of competing on every artifact. So even if they're bigger or better than their competitor, if they don't get the right sales guy in the room, they can't compete at scale, right? So that's sort of the benefit from the two classes of, you know, what we call the supply side of the marketplace, right? The smaller guys can compete based off their excellent tools and great intel, and the big volume guys can compete, you know, in the areas where they're comfortable competing, right? Certain file formats, certain types of threat actors, whatever. But the enterprise wins. It's also a more equitable model than some other things out there, like VirusTotal, where they just give the VirusTotal their engine, and the only thing they receive in return is access to VirusTotal, right? Or like subsidized access to VirusTotal. So, you know, we thought, hey, if these guys are putting all this energy into maintaining these engines and maintaining these threat intel research teams, they might as well get some financial benefit and some better distribution in the market, if that's possible.
Okay, so help me understand where the financial benefit comes from, right? We're talking about vendors who will actually put money bets on the confidence of their determinations, right? When does money start flowing back to them, and where does it come from?
Yeah. So great questions. So one thing to note, when the enterprise sort of submits this artifact and asks the question, "Hey, is this thing bad?" they're actually attaching an initial tokenized payment to that, right? So it's similar to what you would pay for like a, you know, 2 cents for an API call or something like that. So that initial sort of payment acts as sort of a, what we call a neutral counterparty in this bounty system. They just want the right answer, but they don't necessarily care who is correct. So that initial reward is there to incentivize that first guy to answer the bounty, right? So say someone, you know, submits a bounty to PolySwarm and they say, hey, is this thing good or bad? And I'm attaching the equivalent of 2 US cents to the question, right? So that encourages the first engine to sort of weigh in and stake their tokens. So in that case, they might stake tokens worth an equivalent amount. And if they're correct, they get that stake back, and they also get the reward posted by the initial person. Making sense so far?
It is. But I mean, you're going to have a lot of enterprises submitting 2 cent tokens before anyone's getting paid real cash, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a volume game, right? So the interesting difference between our marketplace and like sort of a traditional bug bounty, where a traditional bug bounty is like, hey, find a bug in the software and we'll pay you, you know, on the order of thousands of dollars. We do this sort of at scale, right? So if you think of how many times a day files are scanned for threats between antivirus, mail servers, content-aware firewalls, that sort of thing, you get the idea of the volume actually coming through these, right? And, you know, we know multiple vendors do this sort of second look thing to different cloud services on the order of millions of times a day per vendor, if that makes sense. So the volume is quite high.
It does. So, I mean, really what you want to be is you want to be the one vendor that's reliably detecting a prolific threat, or a threat that's about to become prolific. And I guess the defense against false positives is if they incorrectly flag something, they lose their stake. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And the interesting thing is they don't lose the stake to us. They lose it to the people who are correct, right? So that's your other incentive is, you know, if you're correct, you stand to collect that initial reward and everything that you're, you know, the people on the other side put up, right? And let's say you and I are on the winning side and you put down 2 tokens and I put down 1. Then you take the losing side's stake 2 to 1 from what I get.
Okay, so these enterprises, I'm guessing this isn't going to be manual submission, right? Because we're sort of relying on volume. So you're kind of relying on what, enterprises submitting, you know, automated streams of file hashes with token values attached for assessment. Is that kind of the idea here?
Exactly. You know, so this works pretty well for several use cases, right? So, I mean, like an interesting case is, you know, an enterprise that's running a large web property where they allow users to basically submit, you know, files or post attachments or some sort of service like that, right? You know, PolySwarm would basically be able to, you know, scan those at scale and get several opinions on whether or not that artifact actually has malintent and help them in sort of their abuse processes or things like that.
Wouldn't that get expensive though? Like if you're dealing with like such serious volumes of files?
Yeah, so that's the interesting thing about the marketplaces. They can sort of put the initial bounty on the scans, and their cost to be that initial counterparty, isn't so high. It's probably like a fraction of a cent, right? So yeah, it might get expensive at volume, right? But it's also, if you think of how expensive abuse complaints are to deal with on a manual basis and other things, it might actually be a great solution to the sort of reporting abuse and dealing with that issue.
Yeah, and I guess it depends on how it's handled on the customer side. I mean, are you doing IP addresses as well, or just file hashes?
Yeah, so we're basically doing file-based and hashes right now, and then URLs, IP address, other indicators are coming soon in the roadmap. But yeah, we plan on doing this as well.
Now, the history of Polyswarm here is quite interesting, right? Because you actually raised money via an ICO. What was it, enterprises and, antivirus firms who were buying these tokens when you did your ICO, or was it a swarm of people trying to make a fast buck on the next big ICO?
If we didn't really sit down and give them a quiz, if that makes sense. It's also important to note that we didn't sell to US residents during the actual token sale, because of the regulatory concern.
Okay, so it's non-US residents, not on sanctions lists, and you don't really know really who they are. I mean,
Well,
I'm not, I, this isn't coming off as a criticism. It's more like just a statement of on how weird this whole ICO phenomenon has been. What's fascinating to me is that you were able to raise, and I understand, you raised tens of millions of dollars via this ICO, and now you've actually got a business that looks to be quite interesting and viable, right?
I mean, that's the idea, right? Like, as I told you earlier, we're not of the belief that blockchain solves world hunger problems, but it is really good at tracking incentives, tracking reputation, like how well these engines have done over time, right? And allowing multiple people to participate sort of across borders, with not as much friction as a traditional, say, banking system. So we thought those, might be good fit for this problem of, distributed detection of emergent threats on the internet.
No, it makes sense. I mean, but it also sounds like this business doesn't actually require blockchain to function, right? I mean, we've got companies like, BugCrowd, HackerOne, they don't use blockchain, similar sort of thing, incentive-based model. You could build a billing system. It kind of makes sense, though, that you'd use some sort of Ethereum-based thing to do this. It's an easy way to do it. But, the blockchain part is like, it was excellent for fundraising. It works right now, but it's not really what the business is about.
Let's start with the Ethereum ecosystem and the statement that it's easy to do. I would argue that Ethereum doesn't make everything easy, sort of contrary to popular statement. Like, I agree with you, it'd be a hell of a lot easier to, build a centralized billing system based off some mature database that actually works every time you do something in it.
So why could the question becomes, why aren't you doing that?
So I think this idea of two things, right? So for the past 20 years, there's been sort of like AV comparatives, Virus Bulletin out there, right, that offer these qualitative and somewhat quantitative tests of AV engines, right? And those are great, but at this point, what's the community's incentive to trust that data, right? The interesting thing about Polyswarm is like we track engine performance over time down to a blockchain, which, like I said, isn't the world's greatest database. But the interesting thing is it's supposed to be this immutable ledger that multiple people own, right? So even if a large vendor came to us and said, hey, can you change our test results? Or, hey, can you make this more advantageous for us? The answer is, well, no, we can't, because it's not technically feasible or possible.
So, one of the things that I find most interesting, really interesting about this actually, is the ability for these smaller, scrappier shops to actually participate in this marketplace because, you might find there's a group of like five people who are really good at detecting certain types of threats. I mean, that's pretty core to the concept here, isn't it? Is that you get to reward those people. You don't need necessarily the five big incumbents, their engines. You can probably cover. Get better coverage using a multitude of smaller teams.
Yeah, we think that's a huge advantage as well. And a couple things with that, right? Like, one, if you notice, threats are very regionally specific, right? So, it's super helpful to have a threat intel team in some place like Asia who speaks the local languages, who can track those actors across, specific forums or whatever, right? And, we think that sort of a micro engine that's connected to Polyswarm is you know, those taken together is going to be a lot more powerful than any one vendor's, you know, engine. So yeah, I agree with you. You know, it's early days in the marketplace, and we really have a lot of belief that that's going to be one of the most powerful features of Polyswarm.
Okay, so how do I participate in this marketplace from a vendor side or from an enterprise side? I mean, do I have to go and do some sort of complicated token purchase, or can I just go to your website, like throw in my credit card number and off I go? Like, how does it actually work?
Yeah. So we've received this exact question from a lot of enterprises. So the simple answer from the enterprise is it, you know, works like they'd expect it to. It's, you know, X dollars a month for Y number of scans. And on the back end, we just make sure that, you know, they are basically...
So you handle the unwieldy bits of having to do something on the blockchain.
Yeah, can you imagine making your purchasing department be like, okay, you're going to go acquire this token and then you're going to do this. And yeah, no, it's not something that's like, you know, core to their problem of, hey, I need to protect my users, right? From the supplier side, so, you know, the engine side, yeah, we think a large portion of the security experts on the platform will frankly be comfortable with acquiring the token and making sure their, you know, their engine's sort of fueled for that operation. But we are, you know, talking to the bigger players, especially in regions that aren't like able to handle crypto directly. And just saying, look, well, hey, we'll host your engine and, you know, make sure that the rewards are tracked and you see those rewards. So I'd say it's a mixture, right?
So what's the response been like? I mean, because you've been in business for a little while now, right? So what's the response now? What's the response been like from both the, you know, supply and the demand side? Like, who's on this, in this marketplace participating already?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can look at our press releases. We have, you know, people like K7 Security out of India. They're a medium-sized AV company. They're engines in the marketplace. We have a string of other press releases about, you know, other engines we've got in the marketplace. So on the supply side, they're excited because it sort of gives them this, you know, what looks more like a community-run alternative to some of the other aggregation platforms out there where they see real reward. And by reward, I mean, they see, you know, new samples that they may not otherwise see, and they also see a financial benefit. And from the demand side, from the enterprise side, they're excited about it because it provides an alternative to other things out there like VirusTotal, which unfortunately, because they force every engine to answer for every threat, may provide a little bit more noise than signal in a lot of cases. So good response all around, but I think the most common response we get is, huh, that's interesting. And I really want to see this work. And we agree. We're just getting to the point where we're getting early data on that and seeing that it is starting to work here.
So what sort of enterprises do you actually have on the platform already?
Yeah, so we've got a few in the proof of concept phase. We're not really releasing the names at the moment because you
that
know,
makes sense. But I mean, yeah. That's why I asked what type of customers. Not, you know, tell me who they are, Steve. Tell me who they are. You know, just like yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. Have you picked up banking, insurance, medical? Like, where is the interest? Is it high security environments? Is it government? Like, what type of customer is looking at this stuff? Because yeah. It is new. I mean, how long have you been around? It's been like a year, right?
Yeah, so we've actually been building up the supply side of the platform, and we just sort of released the initial version of that at the end of last year. So it took a fair amount of time to engineer this and build this up because we didn't want to go to the enterprise clients and say like, hey, you know, we've got this marketplace with nobody in it. You know,
with no engines.
You should use
in it.
That.
Yeah.
That's probably not a great response. So we basically have been building up the supply side all last year, and we're just starting to get the proof of concepts. And to your early question, you know, the sort of the types of industries are a lot of MSSPs or SOCs, right?
That makes a lot of sense, right? Like that would make a lot of sense to me because they're the ones who are looking for stuff, you know, maybe around the edges that other stuff might miss. So, and that leads me to this next question, right? Which is like, have you chalked up any wins yet from like a micro team participating in the marketplace? It's found something that no one else has.
Yeah, no, early days, right? So, I mean, I think our detection, you know, rates are decent, but nobody's come out and blogged and said like, hey, I found the next WannaCry pretty early, right? I don't have a great response for you on that at the moment. We think that sort of thing is going to happen, especially when somebody can build their own brand and, you know, provide a new, fresh, exciting name to some phone they discovered first, right? That's always fun.
Yeah, that's always fun. I guess the question is, right, like pricing. You know, how are you pricing this thing? Is this like some sort of, you know, expensive enterprise grade service, or is it like, I mean, one of the, you keep talking about VirusTotal, one of the advantages of VirusTotal is it costs basically nothing. Like, where are you at in terms of pricing?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, for a small number of scans, we basically have the free aspect as well, right? When you start throwing a lot of volume at the network, that's where you get into the enterprise tiers, especially when you start doing that through the API. You know, so we're similar, you know, if you're on the order of tens of thousands of scans per day, you're going to be sort of corralled into the enterprise pricing there. You know, so that's what we're charging. That's mainly to the enterprises and the people who use this in pure consumption mode. So yeah, so on the order from anywhere from like $4,500 on up to, you know, $10,000 or $12,000 US a month from the enterprise side. And that's all based on volume. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I should mention that from the participation standpoint, you know, there's no sort of minimum spend to participate in Polyform, right? Since it's all token driven on that side.
Are you accepting submissions of whole files or is it just file hashes? Because I've kept mentioning hashes, but you know, quite often, especially if these engines are going to be blowing stuff up in a sandbox, right? Like quite often, you're going to want the whole file. You're going to want to watch it. A lot of this analysis these days is dynamic, right? So is it a whole file thing that you're doing?
Whole file, 100%, yeah. And like I said, we want to move past that to, you know, URLs and actually web archives of those URLs. You know, we want to get to MIME types for phishing email detection as well. But, you know, we're 25 people. We've got our development team is effective, but we're not gigantic. So it's, you know, we're definitely putting things on the roadmap and getting to them. So that's the approach, yeah.
Well, I mean, the scuttlebutt I heard is that you raised a substantial amount of money through your ICO and you cashed out about half of it into fiat currency. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And we've been, you know, cash out to operate the business and you know, build the actual infrastructure and the software, right? But if you notice, we've open sourced most of the software, like everything you need to run to Polyform is out there on GitHub at github.com/polyswarm. So you can kind of track our progress and what we're up to. So, yeah, I mean, that being said, right.
But isn't that kind of weird, right? Like, because in a world where I mean, when was your ICO? What date did it actually occur?
So February 22nd, I want to say, all the way through March 29th was when the tokens were released.
And that was last year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's interesting about this is like so many of these ICOs, people just took the money and they pissed off, right? You've actually taken a lot of these, like converted into fiat very sensibly, right? As the whole crypto world has crashed and burned. You're actually building this business out of it. I understand your burn rate's not too bad either. So, I mean, you are a pretty unique business in that regard, right?
I mean, yeah, kind of you to say, you know,
well, I mean, how many other ICOs? I mean, look, you're in that world. I'm not, right. But when I think of ICOs, I think of people grabbing people's cryptocurrency and then, you know, moving to the Caribbean, right? Like that's what I think. I don't think about people who are assembling teams, you know, doing marketing activities like this one. You know, they've converted money into actual money. They're hiring people and they're actually trying to deliver on the promise of their ICO. Like, can you think of too many other ICOs where that's actually happened?
No, not really. You know, I've met a lot of, you know, people in this world and you can ask my team, but I have a strict, you know, I'm done with blockchain conferences for the rest of my life policy going on now. But yeah, I mean, look, I really believe in the model, right? So we're trying to, you know, build it, which I may be rare, but one of my team members forwarded me this thing internally the other day that measures, you know, GitHub code commits, and we were like right behind Bitcoin and some code commit metric, which was surprising to me. At the heart, I think a lot of my team are scientists, right? So we're trying to build this thing and make it actually work, and you know, that's the core of what we're doing, is making the economics and the incentives and this thing work.
What do you want out of this? What do you want out of this podcast? Who do you want to hear from most? Do you want to hear from the AV vendors? Do you want to hear from MSSPs? Do you want to hear from enterprises? I'm guessing you just want to hear from everyone, like all of those people, right?
Yeah, I say all of those people, right? Because I mean, it's a marketplace. It's a two-sided marketplace, right? So there's supply and demand, and what you look at from from designing a marketplace, there's a great book out there called Who Gets What and Why. It's by a guy named Alvin Roth. He's like a Nobel Prize winning economist. And he talks about like the market for kidney donation, right? Or like, the markets for school lotteries, stuff like that. And what you realize is you just need to talk to all these people and figure out, what makes it safe and useful for them to participate in a marketplace and sort of watch how the marketplace evolves over time. And so that's why we want to hear from everybody, is because all those perspectives are really important to making this thing work.
Steve Bassey, thank you very much for joining us on this episode of Soapbox. I mean, I've got a no blockchain rule, but I'm happy to break it for what seems to be like the only non-shonky ICO that I think I've ever heard of. This has been actually really interesting. So thanks again. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. And if anybody wants to find out more about what we're up to, check out polyswarm.io/risky.
That was Polyswarm CEO Steve Bassey there having a chat about Polyswarm. You can find them at polyswarm.io, polyswarm.io. And that is it for this edition of the Soapbox Podcast. I'll be back next week with a regular weekly edition. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.